What is going on, South Carolina and all the ships at sea? Are you hunkered down? Are you hunkered down for Stormageddon? Are you ready, Ramona? 40 states, like the biggest Sunday. Storm in history. Are you ready? Are you set? You got your earmuffs and your hats and your mittens and gloves. How are you today there, producer Ramona?
I'm great, Walt. How are you?
So it's press conference palooza.
Yes.
Before Stormageddon.
Yes. How about that? What a pile of stuff that is.
We have Dabo Swinney and Chad Morris, and somehow, allegedly, those two gentlemen are going to speak for only 25 minutes.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
It seems unlikely on the surface. You know, I don't know if there are any underdog ads, any underdog numbers on that, but I'm guessing most people, you know, like you could play the national anthem. Can you play the Dabo Swinney, Chad Morris part of the press conference and say that they're going to be out by 3:55? 3:55 is a very exact time. It's not, you know, that's not even 4 o'clock. That's like, man, we're keeping to this. So I guess they will. I guess for some reason they're going to have to. So from there, you're going to get Dabo Swinney and Graham Neff from 3:55 to 4:30. And I'm not really going to guess what they're. I mean, obviously, this is going to have to do with Ferrelli and the NCAA and everything else. And, you know, where the venom is going to be directed, or if there's actually going to be public venom, or it's just going to be discussion. I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out from 3:55 to 4:30. So, or, you know, from sometime later than 3:55 for an additional 35 minutes. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that time frame. We're actually going to see whether we have a show today. I'm not entirely sure. We're going to have this first 30 minutes, and then after that, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And obviously, we'll talk about whatever is discussed. I think from my standpoint, you know, maybe the more interesting part of it is the Chad Morris part of it. Because the Chad Morris part of it, we get a million questions. I mean, that part could go on really for hours itself. Because there's just so many unknowns. I mean, you know, how did it happen? You know, first of all, I mean, what made you comfortable with the fit? You know, how have you changed? How have you evolved? How is your offensive scheme evolved since you were here the first time? Are we still going to look for a vertical every quarter? Are we still talking about the same attempt to play with tempo? How have the rule changes going to dictate your approach to tempo, if at all? Which I would think they must to some degree. I think there are a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered of Chad Morris. Again, remember when we first learned of the possibility of Chad Morris being hired, I'm telling you right now, the text lines were 100% opposed. It was universally agreed upon. It was a bad hire. And then, you know, a few days later, people started warming up to it. And now it feels like it's almost flipped completely. Like people are buying into it. I'm not sure what's happened in the interim from the time that we first heard the suggestion to now that has made people flip their point of view to that degree, other than you're now sort of a captive audience. He's your guy, no matter how it turns out. And so you sort of want to have to believe in it. And maybe there are some other reasons to believe in it. And maybe one of them is that Chad Morris isn't a yes man. Maybe that's part of it. You know, there's a thought process that maybe, you know, Garrett Riley couldn't really say anything to Dabo Swinney. And maybe Chad Morris can. You know, maybe Chad Morris has. I mean, you know, in terms of like some of these moves that have already been made, I mean, Chris Johnson Jr., was that a Chad Morris initiative? Was Jaylen Brown Wallace a Chad Morris initiative? What about the quarterbacks? First of all, how much time have you had to evaluate your offensive personnel? I mean, it's still limited. It's any way you look at it, he's had a limited amount of time to make that evaluation. Unless, you know, the possibility of Chad Morris winding up the offensive coordinator here was known to Dabo Swinney and to Chad Morris well before it became well known to us. In which case, maybe there was more preparation to evaluate the options. But, you know, Chad Morris is not a yes man. And there's a thought that he has the maturity and that Dabo Swinney respects him enough that he'll listen to his viewpoints. So along that line of thought, when it comes to quarterback specifically, how much time have you had to evaluate the quarterbacks, and were you in agreement that Clemson did not need to add a portal quarterback? I mean, I think that question needs to be asked of him. I mean, you're going to get a company line on that one, but I think the question still needs to be asked. You know, they're going to give you, you know, look, way back when I was saying Deshaun Watson would start by game four of the North Carolina game, you know, we were hearing that Deshaun Watson didn't give Clemson the best chance to win. But allegedly, in stories that have come out recently, some of the things we've heard, allegedly, Morris had a different viewpoint on Cole Stout and Deshaun Watson. But publicly, they presented one opinion. And, you know, that's the way the world works, okay? In other words, if Donald Trump comes out and says something, J.D. Vance isn't going to come out and say the counter to that. You know, that's just not how the world works. You're going to toe some sort of company line and some sort of universal approach. You've got to be unified to a degree. It's not just presenting a unified approach. I mean, you've got to have you can have difference of opinions behind closed doors, but ultimately you've got to come to some meeting of the minds and some conclusion. So was Chad Morris a part of that process, or had that part been decided already? I don't know that you get an answer to that, but I still think the question needs to be asked. I think the question needs to be asked, has Chad Morris had time to evaluate the quarterbacks, and was he in line with not pursuing a transfer portal quarterback? If he has had time to evaluate the quarterbacks, what has he seen? I mean, look, if that press conference, that first part of the press conference is 25 minutes, I don't think you're getting answers, detailed answers. I mean, because again, I can think of endless questions to ask Chad Morris. Endless questions. They go the whole 4 hours. But if that press, if that first part of that press conference is geared to a 25-minute time period, then you're not going to get detailed answers to all this. There's just simply not time for it. I mean, it's going to be more of an introduction. Welcome back. Hey, Chad, how you doing? You know, I mean, you know, it's good to see you again. You know, and maybe there's this kumbaya kind of deal on that. I'm just not sure. But I think there are questions to be asked and answered, a lot of questions. You know, again, it's been a while for Chad Morris. You know, at one point, I interviewed Chad Morris, and Chad said that in regards to the nature of the game, that it is ever-evolving. And we talked about how offenses had moved ahead and what defenses were doing to try and catch up with up-tempo spreads at the time. And Chad Morris at the time said, yeah, 100%. Well, I've basically got to evolve every single day. He said that. He said, I've got to evolve every single day, that I can't stay stagnant or I will get caught. And so I guess one question would be, have you evolved? And in what way? In what way do you feel you've evolved? What will that look like schematically? You know, what will that evolution look like schematically? I think these are all legitimate questions to be asked and answered. Now, again, I don't know that you have the time frame for any of that. And so maybe it won't be geared towards that. I don't know. I mean, I would think that you're going to get
maybe a chance. Maybe it's just a meet and greet.
Well, maybe like
they stand up there, they talk and say bye. Here comes Grim now.
Well, again, that's what 25 minutes makes me wonder about. You know, because it just seems to me, let's be honest, both Dabo and Chad are long-winded individuals. They can both talk up a storm.
Yes.
They can both talk up a winter Armageddon, you know, and so limiting that to 25 minutes when you're going to have questions asked and hopefully answer. I'm not sure how you do that, quite frankly, because, again, I can think of several hours worth of questions I want to ask right now. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that all develops. And yeah, it feels like there are things that we need to know, and it starts with quarterback. You know, so look, he may just say that he has not had time to make these evaluations yet. And quite honestly, I'm not quite sure how he would have. Unless, again, this process started long before we knew. You know, unless there was some back-channel discussion of this possibility long before we knew. I don't know the answer to that. Could it have been? Maybe. Maybe. You know, Dabo Swinney always knows what his next move is. He's not going to reveal it publicly, but he always knows what his next move is. I've asked him those questions before. He says, yeah, 100%. So I'm guessing that I don't know at what point in Dabo Swinney's mind the plug was actually pulled on Garrett Riley. I don't know. But, you know, and I don't know whether there was a salvation there, whether there was some pathway that for Garrett Riley to have maintained his job at the end of the season there by some particular result or something. I don't know. I'm thinking not. I'm thinking that decision was made at some point earlier. You know, Dabo was never going to address that until the season was over publicly, but I'm guessing that he had made that decision in his mind at some point earlier. That's actually another question that could be asked. You know, how did this come to be? You know, and what was the timing of it? Now, again, that's probably questions that can't really be answered. There are times you have to ask questions just because you have to ask the questions, whether the questions are answered or not. But there's so much to be gleaned, and I'm going to let the 3:55 or whatever time that part starts with Dabo Swinney and Graham Neff play itself out, because I mean I think we understand, you know, the parameters of what that conversation is going to be about, but I don't think we really have an idea as to what the specifics are going to be, nor what they can reveal. Even if they are going to make some sort of legal challenge to it, they're going to be very limited in what they can say. You know, if they're intent on making some sort of legal challenge, then I don't know how much information they can even give you. Now they can speak to the NCAA and the NCAA's ineptitude and their failure to act and basically publicly challenge the NCAA. The NCAA has been publicly challenged a million times in recent years, including all the way back to the North Carolina academic scandal, where the NCAA said, basically, do not cross this line or we will, and North Carolina immediately jumped across the line. So, you know, it's essentially an organization of eunuchs. And it'll be interesting to see whether Clemson goes after the eunuchs and with how much vigor, because the eunuchs don't like vigor. So we shall see. As to all of that, that's right. It's the NCAA Eunuch Union.
There you go.
We have lots to get to, but we also have allegedly a very severe upcoming winter storm warning for the weekend. I'm checking the temperatures, and I don't know. It looks like Sunday looks like the day to be concerned about. But look, if you have trees around your home, you're concerned now. And you're going to need the Franklin Tree Services phone number if and when you have any trees down. 864-947-9065. Take this down. Have it. Make sure you have it. If the worst happens, you'll know where to go for help. You're not going to be able to reach me. 864-947-9065. Franklin Tree Service is proud to be a longtime partner of the Roar. They're affordable, reliable, and trusted option for all your tree service needs across the upstate. Whether it's one tree or 20 trees, they're here to help you make the right decisions when it comes to removal, trimming, assessing for any kinds of hazards. The upstate has strong storms and wind gusts throughout the year, and we all have that one tree in our yard that looks a little suspect, like it might fall or damage your property if it had the chance. So don't let that happen again. again, in these storms, we all know the dilemmas. It's not even just the storm. It's the aftermath of the storm when the ground starts to thaw out and you have this increased water table in the ground and trees still fall then. So there's no telling what this the length of this danger period. So make sure you have the number. Free tree assessments to identify potential hazards, safe removal of leaning trees, trimming of overhanging limbs, yard thinning to prevent future damage, emergency storm services, fully insured and committed to top quality work. Call the Franklin Tree Service today, 864-947-9065, 864-947-9065. I'm hoping that we get some questions as we get a break. I'm hoping that we get some legitimate questions and answers. I hope it's just not like we don't have a, you know, like a kumbaya, pom-pom waving. We're all together again. The band's back together. I hope we get some questions and answers. Quick break.
Playoff football. There is nothing like it in the world. And as the games get bigger and more important, there's more and more reason to enjoy all the action with Underdog. I love sitting down watching NFL football, particularly during the playoffs, and having some skin in the game. And you can right now in South Carolina. It's a great way to play, and it's an easy way to play. You're just picking higher or lower on your favorite player stats, like passing yards and receptions and even tackles and sacks and kicking points, all kinds of stuff across the spectrum. There's always a unique way you can play. What are you waiting for? Download the app today. Use promo code OOB to score $75 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code OOB. Underdog, make picks, win money. Must be 18 plus and present in South Carolina. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing. Get terms underscore DFS underscore .html for details. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Need portable toilets for your construction sites or next event?
Call 864-238-8800.
Yes, Royal Flush Toilet Rental is your answer when it comes to emergency rentals, festivals, wedding, or backyard parties.
Call 864-238-8800.
Remember, if you're in upstate South Carolina, Royal Flush Toilet Rental is locally owned, dependable, and your local portable toilet company.
Call 864-238-8800.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber. One Tom Plumber.
I need a good plumber fast.
I always call One Tom Plumber.
One Tom what?
Here, dial the number one, then Tom Plumber. Or just tell your smartphone to call One Tom Plumber. They promise to be there in an hour.
Call the plumber whose name is his number.
Don't let your basement become a wet and moldy nightmare. It's a valuable space in your home and it should be treated that way. We understand that a dry basement is a healthy basement. Our experts have the technology to keep your basement dry and mold free. All of our services come with a transferable warranty and the financing is available. Call Canty today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantyconfixit.com.
Parenting is hard. It's even harder if your child tells you they're in trouble with the law. What should you do next? Nick Lavery, Clemson's local attorney, is here to help. Nick and his legal team know the best options to help defend and protect your child and their future. Whether it's a DUI, minor in possession, public disorderly conduct, or a fake ID, Nick Lavery is here to help you and your child. For your free consultation, call 864-654-3680.
There's a better option for blood work in the upstate. I'm Dr. Ted Swan, a Clemson graduate practicing in the upstate for over 20 years. Unhappy with the national giants, we built Tiger Diagnostics Laboratory, a physician-led solution. We offer after-hours blood draws, signature health panels, and a better patient experience in Seneca, Anderson, Greenville, and after-hours in Piedmont. Learn more at tigerdiagnosticslab.com.
Upstate Cycling Greenville is celebrating 46 years in business. Come check out our kids' ATVs and dirt bikes. We also have bikes for riders who are still kids at heart, ranging from entry level all the way to off-road racing, dual sport, and adventure riding. We carry brands like Beta, Cove, SSR, and many more. Delivery is available, and don't forget to ask about layaway plan. Mention the Roar FM to receive $50 off our best price. Call 864-232-7223 for more info today.
At Progressive, we know money can't buy you happiness, but money did help you buy an RV, which means an excuse from working Saturday with your insufferable coworker, Dave. So money is helping you listen to birds chirp instead of Dave chirping about how his toddler is fluent in three languages. And it's also why you'll be smelling pine trees in the air, not Dave's tuna melt reheating in a microwave. So save money by bundling your RV or boat insurance with home or auto from Progressive and buy more happiness or something close to it. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
If it matters, we're talking about it.
Like it matters?
Oh, it matters.
We're 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar, where every day is game day.
When the night has come, and all the land is dark, and the moon is the only.
Waltip, Tulip Road Rage, so we may have some fireworks this afternoon. We'll see. I'm surprised this press conference is taking place on a Friday. Maybe there was some other logistical reason that had to be the case. I'm still a little surprised that it's on a Friday. Hey, let me tell you about my friends at Twin Peaks. NFL playoffs. And it doesn't matter what the sport is. NCAA basketball, UFC fights with free admission, NHL hockey. Why wait for the weekend? At Twin Peaks, late night hits every night. Fresh, scratch-made food, handcrafted cocktails, ice-cold 29-degree draft beer served till the lights go low. So when the rest of the world winds down, we're turning up the heat. Pull up to the lodge and experience the best late night in the league tonight, tomorrow, every night you crave it. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views. By the way, if you're looking for a job where you can have fun, build great relationships, make serious money, then it's time to join the team at Twin Peaks. We're hiring Twin Peaks girls, cooks, bussers, barbacks, and more. Fast paced, high energy, great earnings, an atmosphere that feels like family. Ready for a job that you'll actually love? Text WORK, all capital letters, to the number 4, capital T, capital P, WORK4TP to 85000 to apply. That's WORK4TP to 85000, 3 zeros, 85000. Twin Peaks, work hard, play hard, earn big. And nobody does happy hour like the Peaks, man. Nobody. Whatever you're craving, we've got it. Tequila cocktails, premium bourbon pours, top shelf spirits served over ice balls that hit just right, local craft beers, handcrafted whiskey cocktails, yep, all here. And don't forget the teeth-shattering 29-degree drafts we're famous for. Pair it all with scratch-made kitchen bites that actually satisfy, from shareables to hearty favorites. When it comes to happy hour, Twin Peaks doesn't play. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views, 80 high definition monitors. The food's the biggest shock. You know about the beautiful women. You know about the scenic views. You even know about the 80 high definition monitors. No matter where you sit, you get the best scene. Now, it's like you're in your own studio, except in this studio, a multitude of beautiful women bring you food and drink all day and night. So get the Twin Peaks. I promise you will thank me later. All right. We're in a countdown. We're waiting for Diablo Swinney and
every day. Literally just got back 20 minutes ago, so been on the road pretty much every day, and a lot going on these last couple weeks. So good to have a chance to catch up with everybody today. Just quickly, 2025 is in the books, and is a frustrating and tough season for us. And not going to spend a lot of time rehashing that. I would just say, you know, football is there's a small margin of error, and it's a game of a few plays. We lost three games by 11 points, and two of those on the last play of the game. And two other games, 6 points or less in the fourth quarter, and we didn't get it done. So at the end of the day, we had five winnable games, and, I didn't get the job done. So got to fix it. And that's just simple as that. My responsibility, biggest issues, you know, just big picture looking back, scoring offense. And that's a reflection of rushing offense and third down. So we just did a poor job in those areas. And then probably the worst pass defense I've had since I've been a head coach. It's really poor. And then we gave up a touchdown on a kickoff return in a game. And so when you have a small margin for error and you got winnable games, you know, you got to find a way to get better. So those are the biggest issues, but there was also a lot of good from 25. The biggest thing for me was the team responded and the team stayed together. And I saw some extraordinary leadership from some amazing young men in our program, championship men, guys that have won championships in this program. I saw some great leadership from them. And again, it wasn't what they wanted their story to be or what I wanted our story to be last year. But as it turned out, that was our story. You know, they became the best turnaround team in Clemson history. You know, the fourth team to start 1-3 or worse, or 30 teams to start 1-3 or worse, only the fourth to get to 6 wins, and they were the only one to get to 7. So I'm proud of how they finished, 4 in a row to finish the season strong and winning the state championship for the 9th time in 11 years. And then they rallied. Backs against the wall. We rallied to secure our 15th winning season in a row. And it took a rally to be able to do that. And our goal is not to have a winning season. But where we were, all you can do is respond. And these guys rallied to do that for a 15th winning season in a row. And I think Alabama is the only one to have a longer streak. I think they've had 19 winning seasons in a row. So, again, not going to rehash much of that. Today is about resetting. It's about moving forward better, stronger, wiser, more focused because of the lessons of 2025. And, you know, y'all have heard me say many times, and something that I live by is God never says oops. You know, that's why, you know, I'm not going to say this season was a disappointment. It was frustrating. It was tough. But God never says oops. And I believe that what ended had a purpose. And what's beginning is right on time. That's what I believe. It's 2026. And it's a new team. It's a new season. It's a new journey. It's a new opportunity. And I'm super excited to, you know, formally be able to announce some changes to our staff. And, you know, sometimes in life you have to go back in order to go forward. And I think that that's where we are in this case. So I've gone back to the future with Chad Morris. I got old Marty McFly right here next to me. And I'll just say this. The reasons that I hired Chad in 2011 are the exact same reasons that I've hired him today. And so I'm really excited about being able to introduce him and give him a chance to have a Q&A here in just a second. But first of all, just big picture staff. Chad will be our OC. Taj, we've promoted. Chad and I, we've promoted to quarterback coach. Obviously, Chad coached Taj his whole career. Really awesome. It's been a lot of fun seeing that. Chad's in the office every day. Chad's not going to be on the road. He's going to be in the office. And, you know, they're getting a ton of work done. Lonnie Galloway, who was a volunteer for us last year, will be our senior offensive assistant and continue to work with our receivers. I was able to hire Mike Miller. And we had a lot of openings because a bunch of people went to Samford and a couple of people moved on. So Mike Miller, who was here in 2015 and was hired by Nick Saban at Alabama, and then he went to Maryland as passing game coordinator for 4 years with Loxley and then the offensive coordinator at Charlotte. Mike's got a ton of great experience, and we're really excited to have him back. He'll be working with Chad. Jacoby Ford will be a player development coach and our assistant receiver coach, and he'll also be working with speed development for our team. Jacoby obviously was a great player here and been gone from here a long time, but he's been training the best of the best down in Florida for a long time from a speed development standpoint with you know, working with Tony Villani down there and training a lot of pros, getting them ready for the combine. But he's also been a high school coach for the past 8 years. In fact, he just won his second state championship, back-to-back state championships at West Boca High School. So really excited about bringing Jacoby back. Artavis Scott, the all-time receptions leader here in school history, was a GA here, got hired at Howard, and for the last 2 years. He's been coaching at Howard University. He'll be our assistant running backs coach, so excited to have him. And then Brad Glenn. Brad is will be a player development coach and assistant tight ends. You know, Brad has been an offensive coordinator for 21 years. He's always wanted to work at Clemson. It just hadn't really quite worked out. His situation changed at Cincinnati. He's the offensive coordinator at Cincinnati, offensive coordinator at Louisville, App State. And, you know, this is kind of a unique opportunity for him to come and join us. And so I'm really excited to have Brad. And the cool thing about him is he's a Clemson grad. He went to Seneca High. His wife's from Walhalla. So excited to have Brad join us. I know some of y'all have probably heard Freddie Kitchens is roaming around. He's an unpaid volunteer analyst for us. And, you know, I was one of Freddie's coaches. You know, when Freddie was playing quarterback for us, I was the receiver coach and Woody was the quarterback's coach. And so I've known Freddie a long time. Obviously, he's been in the NFL most of his career. He's been a head coach in the NFL, offensive coordinator. He's been around a lot of ball. So he's just, you know, wanted to take a year to come and kind of reset. And so you'll see him around. Defensively, the biggest change, you know, that we made was Thomas Allen will be our defensive passing game coordinator. And this is something we kind of made an adjustment to the last – if you read the tea leaves a little bit, you probably caught on to that toward the end of the season. And, you know, I didn't really know Thomas other than he was Tom's son coming in here. But let me tell you, he'll be a coordinator in the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12 before he's 30. I mean, he is really, really gifted young coach. And, you know, I'm thankful that we were able to keep him here at least for another year. He did an awesome job. He'll work with the back five, but he will handle our installs and just making sure that everybody's on the same page. And he really did a great job when we kind of empowered him this way as the season wore on this past year. And so I'm excited about that. Nolan Turner will be our safeties coach. Y'all all know Nolan. I'm really proud of Nolan. Highly respected by these players, incredibly knowledgeable. Excited to bring Carrico right back. Carrico, I think, has been gone here since 2015. He's been coaching the secondary his whole career. He's been coaching corners and safeties at Murray State, at Furman, at James Madison, and then recently at Delaware. And so I'm really excited to have Carrico. My first ever public commit was Carrico Wright and in the Dandy Dozen. So really proud of him and excited to have him join us. He'll coach our nickels. And then you'll see another guy maybe walking around. He looks like a DN. His name is Jayron Kirsch, and he is back in school. And it's been a blessing to just meet the 31-year-old version of Jayron Kirsch. I always say we run this program, what's best for the 30-year-old? And to see him stand up in front of the team and speak to the team when we introduced him was really cool. He's married. He's got a beautiful family. But he wants to finish his degree. He had a great career, played a long time. And it was fun to hear him talk to the team about, let me just tell y'all, the 31-year-old Jayron Kirsch is a lot different than that 18, 19, 20-year-old Coach Sweeney knew. And I was going amen to that. So to see him back here, and it's just awesome. His knowledge, his example. So he'll be a student assistant for us and finish his degree in our Tiger Trust program. And I'm thankful for our administration for supporting that and bringing our guys back to finish their degrees. And then from a strength and conditioning standpoint, you already know about D. Love. He's off to a great start. It's been awesome. I kind of went and hid out the other day like undercover boss. Nobody knew I was in there. I was so impressed with what I saw. And then Anthony Lazard is coming. He's coming from Stanford. So he'll be replacing Dennis's spot within our staff there. And then the only thing I have left is our special teams coordinator. And, you know, I've got a good plan on what we're going to do there. But I'll be making an announcement on that, you know, here sometime soon. So that's where we are from a staff standpoint. And so with that, I want to formally introduce going back to the future here and introduce Chad Morris, and sure he'll have some opening comments, and you guys can ask him a few questions.
Well, thank you, Coach. I can't thank Coach Sweeney enough, and Graham Neff, our Board of Trustees. I mean, to be back at Clemson, a place that Paul and I have enjoyed so much in our career, starting back to 2011. But we're so happy to be back. I mean, this is home to us. There's so many. I look across out here and see how many familiar faces, and exciting to be back. Excited to be back into a program that is the caliber of Clemson and what Coach Sweeney stands for, and the players and the as you build this team and build this roster. There's so many things besides football that have brought these players and will bring these players together and get Clemson back to the top of where we want to be. There's so many other things that I want and people I want to thank. Coach Elliott at UVA to allow me to be a part, him and Coach Kitchens allow me to be a part this past year and kept me involved and let me help them and through the process of the season. I was able to work with Answers, which was a data analytic group with that deals with football coaches and just one of the elite programs in the country that allowed me to travel the country this year. And thank the many coaches that let me come in their door and let me help them out and learn from them as I traveled around and to see how things were done. And because if you don't know, if you stay in one spot and being in the coach, I had a chance this past year to really get out and see the way other programs run things, both good and bad. And that was really beneficial for me. So I want to thank all the coaches and staffs that allowed me to sit in their meeting rooms and go to their practices. And finally, I'm just thankful for this opportunity. Much like 2011, we had an incredible opportunity in 2011. And we closed the door and we locked arms and we went to work. And we put this program, Coach Sweeney's vision and direction, in an upward trend, a trajectory that obviously took off and exploded. And to be back here in 2026, Coach, thank you. Paul and I, as I mentioned earlier, so excited to be back home and to another great opportunity. And I'm itching to work with our players. I'm glad I'm in the office. We're doing a lot of recruiting in the mornings and in football in the afternoons. But, man, to be able to spend time with these players and to know what we have and to be able to be just a further ahead as we get ready for spring football. But I'm grateful for this opportunity and excited to be back and be a part. So with that, I'm going to open up for some questions.
Chad, you talked about touring those different programs across the country. I guess what did you learn in those visits about how things were kind of done?
Well, as you step back and you travel around, you find different ways to do things. Maybe it's some of the different ways practices are structured. Maybe it's some drill work in practices. Maybe it's the way meetings are done. A lot more walkthroughs at times instead of some, supplementing this in place of that. Listening and watching their strength staff and watching those guys work. So I don't think there's really one or two things that you say, well, this is what you really look for. Every program I traveled all over the Big 12. I went to the Mountain West. I mean, all over. And then just to be able to see good and bad. I mean, there were some things out there you're looking like, okay, I wouldn't want to do that. And then there's other things you're like, you know what, there's some things that I was doing and that we're doing offensively that's really good. Man, this adds a little extra tweak that can make us better. And then to be able to work with Coach Elliott and to go up there and while the footprint and the blueprint is extremely similar to what he learned here, offensively, some things have kind of changed the way some things are run, or maybe some ways some things are called. And for Coach Elliott to allow me to be a part of that and to watch and learn and obviously see their success was great. But I think there was just so much value being able to travel around and talk to other coaches. And so, yeah.
David. How will your offense be the same? As in, you still want to take two deep shots a quarter, run, 80, 90 plays a game, and then based off of, what you've learned since you've been gone, how will it be different?
Yeah, first of all, taking two deep shots a quarter, I'd probably be a little bit disappointed in that, David. Right? Honestly, we're a two-back run-oriented play-action shot football team that's going to take great pride in pushing the ball down the field. We want to travel and we want to push the ball down the field at least three times a quarter. And that means the ball traveling in the air 25 yards or more three times a quarter. Chart it. Let's figure it out. Why ain't it happening? And get the ball to our playmakers. And how are we going to do that is getting in and out of structures, being able to play. Obviously, we're a base 11 personnel team, but be able to get in some 12 personnel at times too. Be able to change the pace. Probably the one thing you asked what was different, in 2011, it was all about tempo, tempo, tempo. Well, defenses have caught up with that. So tempo now is the ability to change the pace of play and do it in different structures of how you do it. Play fast, play really fast, be able to huddle at times, get underneath center, and be able to change those things. But at the end of the day, let's don't complicate this thing. Let's get the ball to our playmakers, and let's let those guys go make plays.
Dabo, I think when you brought it in 2011, one of the reasons you did was because it was different, like something that people in the ACC hadn't really seen. Do you think it's maybe still that here in 2026? And was that one of the reasons? And maybe, Chad, you can elaborate on that as well.
No, I wouldn't. That really wasn't why I brought him in. I brought him in because he was doing what I wanted to do. And I had Taj Boyd, and I felt like, I wanted to go to a spread attack. And I wanted to just had a different philosophy that I wanted to get to with the personnel that I had. I had this young quarterback in Taj Boyd, and he was going to be a redshirt sophomore. He hadn't played. I had DeAndre Hopkins here, and I had this kid named Sammy Watkins on the way. I had Andre Ellington. I had some, and I'm like, I had Dwayne Allen, and we were okay in the OL, and I wanted to attack people, spreading them out formationally. I wanted to get the tempo going. That was a little different, and like everything around here, I get a lot of advice anytime any type of decision's made, and I've made a lot of decisions in my days. My best decisions have usually been the most unpopular. My worst decisions have been the most popular, to be honest with you. All right? And I've made good decisions and bad ones. But when I hired Chad, and I didn't consult with anyone, and we just won 6 games. And I knew that we were going to have to win. They could have fired me for a Hall's dinner. And I knew we had to win. So I did my due diligence. I had a lot of opinions. I had a lot of people writing me. I had a state senator call me personally and tell me that if I didn't hire this guy, I should be fired. And I said, well, I'm not hiring him. We'll find out. And the rest is history. I hired a guy that had been in college for 8 months, but I did my due diligence. And then I brought 2 in. Once I narrowed it down to 5 and then to 2, I brought 2 in to interview. And I felt like Justin Fuente was the other one. But I felt like with 2 things with Justin, I was going to have to – I didn't want to change all my terminology. I didn't want to start over with Taj. And with Justin, we were going to have to change all the terminology. And I also felt like he was getting ready to be a head coach, like yesterday. And that's exactly what happened. I think 1 year later, he was a head coach. And when Chad came in, I accused him when he first came in here. I was like, somebody's giving you the answers here because we spoke the same language. We were really, truly yoked together. We thought the same, and it just clicked. And so, I took a lot of risk, but I had conviction in what I believed. Now, it didn't start off very well. We were getting booed against Troy and Wofford right out of the gate, but we got it going. And the rest is history. Taj Boyd became the winningest quarterback in school history when he finished here. But we just thought, and then the other thing with Chad is I felt like I would have some time with him to build a runway, to really build a foundation to what I wanted offensively. There were some things that we had in place here, but he had some answers that I didn't quite have yet. He was able to fill in some blanks that I had on what I wanted to do. And so it was just this perfect fit for us. And I also felt like Chad would really invest in our staff. All right, I hired this young guy named Tony Elliott. I had a young guy named Jeff Scott. I had, some young coaches. And Chad did an amazing job. And I felt like he was not going to be a head coach next year. And as it turned out, he had 4 years here before he left to go be the head coach at SMU. And at that time, I felt like, okay, all right, we're in a good spot right here. And I like where I'm at. And so that's when I said, all right, Tony, you're going to call you and Jeff. I'm going to promote you guys, even though you've never called a play. And the rest is history. But the foundation was built when I hired Chad. All right. And now he's been all over the world. He's done a lot of things. He's been a head coach. He's a different Chad Morse, than the one I hired. He's a better Chad Morse. And I'm a better head coach. And so the same reasons, again, that I hired him is the same today. Our philosophies line up, and, you know, we got to run the football. And when you can run the football, it makes your team tougher. And when you can run the football, you create some one-on-one matchups. And you know, he loves taking advantage of those things. So there was just a lot of things, you know, again, back then that are same now. But the game has evolved, and he's evolved. So there will be some things that will be similar. I mean, we still run the zone, still run the power, still run the counter. I mean, you still run some zone and gap schemes. I mean, that's football. But how you do things, how you manipulate things with cadence, formations, how you get on the edge, you know, getting the ball down the field, those are all things that, you know, come with the play caller and the philosophy. And there's a great alignment there.
Will back here. Just wanted to ask you, like, your assessment on your quarterback room and your thoughts there.
I think we've got some incredibly talented quarterback room. I really feel that way. I know there's teams across the country that love to have the talent that's sitting in that room. And we brought in some guys, you know, and I'm learning everybody. I'm actually going through individual meetings with all my players right now and getting to know them to getting to know me. So, you know, to bring in Brock Bradley and Tate Reynolds, new guys coming in addition to CV, which has already been here, had a game underneath his belt this year and, you know, started against SMU, played well. Chris Denson, another one that got some playing experience this year, extremely dynamic, talented. I've been able to watch some video on these guys. And then Trent Pierman. I think you got a great group that's in there that's going to create extreme competition. And much like when I got here in 2011, you know, Taj, there was competition in that room, and competition brings the best out of everybody. But excited about the new guys coming in, excited about the guys in that room, and man, I can't wait till we get to spring and watch these guys compete.
Take one more quick one for Coach Morris. Anybody
have one? Did you consider adding a portal quarterback, or how did the decisions between you guys go on that, adding a transfer quarterback to that room specifically?
Yeah, no, that's my decision, and we obviously were aligned in that, but. He just said it, you know, again, if you take, you know, people will, if you take a quarterback, then you're losing two. And I don't want to lose the guys we got. I believe it. I think this is as talented a room as we've had in a long time. CV has done everything that's been asked of him, and he's earned the opportunity. He's earned the opportunity to have the pole position. Now he's got to win the race, but he's got the opportunity to come out, with pole position. Denson is a kid that I think has developed tremendously over this past year. And again, you can go get in those sweepstakes, but then you probably don't keep some of the guys that we were able to retain. All right, number one, you got to make some decisions financially. And then number two, you're going to lose some guys in that room. And CV has been a guy, you know, we get frustrated when we have a talented young player who packs up and leaves because he's maybe not quite as patient. And we know he's going to be a good player, but maybe it's going to – but then we don't want to reward loyalty when a guy has done everything that's been – you don't think he could have gone in the portal? Absolutely. This was a highly recruited kid who bought into the vision, who bought into the development process. We offered two quarterbacks in that class, and this kid has done everything. And with his opportunity, I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning, but with the opportunity that he's had, he's performed well. And he's shown – development. And so he will have the opportunity. He'll have the pole position. But Denson has tremendously improved. We recruited him to come in here and play. And then we just signed, in my opinion, two of the best young talented quarterbacks in the country. I think Tate Reynolds is a unicorn. I think this kid is so unique. He's big, he's strong, he can fly. He got elite arm talent. This guy is an elite two-sport athlete. And he's not a guy that's been a quarterback guru, 7-on-7 guy. He's showing up and playing and going to play baseball and all this stuff. But he came here to compete. He came here to compete. And we told him he would have the opportunity to compete. Brock Bradley is the same way. This is a highly developed 7A quarterback in the state of Alabama. And so these guys are all here, and I'm super excited about the room. So we're committed to the guys that are here.
and adding to what Coach said, you know, I've been around quarterbacks my whole life. You know, that's what I've specialized in. I've got a son that's a quarterback. I know what it's supposed to look like. It's my job to develop these guys and put them on a path to develop them. As we've watched previous quarterbacks that they've played in this system, you know, and watch these guys, how they've developed. So I'm excited about the opportunity to develop these young men. I'm excited about the competition. And again, I'm excited about the future of Clemson football. And appreciate you. And is there anything else, Ross?
Coach Morris, appreciate your time. We'll allow you to transition out. We'll allow Director of Athletics Graham Death to transition in. Coach Sweeney will have some comments on some transfer signings. And then we'll have additional business at the end to address. Questions at the end will be time-dependent once again. So, Coach, if you'd like to discuss the transfers, go ahead.
Yeah. So, y'all know about the 15 mid-years that we signed, and they're all here and off to a great start. And we also signed 10 transfers to fill our – we had some targeted needs that we were able to fill and went and filled all of them. You know, it was – we used the portal as I've always said, we would use the portal. If we can't get our – who we think our top high school prospects are, that puts us in the portal. Or if we get some guys that are committed and we get decommits, you got to replace that. And we had 4 decommits. We had a couple of guys we didn't get, and then we had 4 decommits that put you in the portal. And then if you have some guys leave, we had 2 starting safeties that left. We had a couple of depth DBs that moved on. We had 2 depth linebackers that moved on. Had a couple of D linemen. We had a graduate running back who moved on. And a couple guys go pro early. So you got to replace that. And that's what we were able to do, you know, with the portal. We were very strategic about it as far as who we reached out to, how we wanted to set the visits up. We got our top 2 safeties. We went after these 2 guys, and we got both of them. Jerome Carter from ODU and Corey Myrick from Southern Miss. Both are juniors. These guys are long. They can run. They're both all-conference players. These are really good football players. Our process is the same, and they really fit and align with who we are here. So super excited about those guys. We needed a little more speed. The 2 depth DBs we lost, we went and got our top 2 guys, Elliot Washington at corner, who's a 4-3 guy, a senior from Penn State. And then we got Donovan Starr, who honestly would have come here out of high school, but we took a young man, and he went to Auburn, and then that kid decommitted, and it was too late to get Donovan. Well, they obviously made a change at Auburn, and so the timing was right. Donovan came on over here. But both of these guys can run. Donovan will be a sophomore, and Elliot will be a senior. So super excited about that. So those 4 guys, we got some speed, some length and size and athleticism, and then we needed some size and speed and toughness in our D-line. We got Marcus Strong, who is big. He's twitchy from Oklahoma. We got Courtney Kelly, who is a really intriguing prospect. You know, got some explosiveness. He's a tough kid. He's from West Georgia. Marcus has 2 years left. Courtney's got 3. Then we needed a couple DNs, and we got kind of our top target was London Merritt. He's a kid we knew a lot about. We recruited him out of high school. He's a freshman all-conference guy there in the Big 12 at Colorado. Super good fit for us. Same thing. He's got 3 years left. And then we wanted some real juice. We wanted something a little unique off the edge. And we found this kid at Howard thanks to Artavis. You know, we found this kid at Howard, C.J. Wesley, and we just ran everybody the other day. I think he ran 4.56, 225 pounds. And, you know, he's got real juice. And so we wanted a little something different off the edge. He's got length. So, again, we put it all together the way we needed to. And then offensively, we had a running back, as I said, that decided to go on and play somewhere else. So we said, well, we had a spot. So let's get something different than what we have. So we went and found Chris Jefferson. Chris Johnson. Chris Jefferson is a receiver I coached when I first got here. But Chris Johnson, CJ, from Fort Lauderdale, Dillard. So we recruited CJ, Chris, out of high school. He came in here on a visit, so we knew a lot about him. reached out to Rhett, talked a lot about him, and he came in here, but he is fast, and he brings a unique skill set. You know, when you're talking about threaten horizontally and vertically, he's touchdown fast. I mean, he's touchdown fast, meaning if he breaks a tackle, it's a touchdown. If they miss a tackle, it's a touchdown. Like he's the state. I think he still has the state 200 meter record in the state of Florida. So this is a really unique guy. And then we signed J.B. Wallace, who's a receiver from Wingate. You know, when you're looking at your roster, like for example, there's a number at we've gone to 105, and so that's the other thing we had to address in the portal this year. Is this the first year we've really recruited to a 105 number? And so, for example, at receiver, your number is 14. Well, you're not going to have 14 T.J. Moores and Wescos, and that's not reality. You know, I know everybody'd like to have that, but you can't pay them, number one, and they're not going to stay. So you have to put your roster together because you have to practice, and you've got to have some developmental guys. So kind of just for a lack of a better term, our goal of that is to try to have maybe 9 first, second, third round draft picks. You know, I'm not talking about NFL. I'm talking about kind of like dudes in our collegiate world here, like high-end guys, these are your contract guys, and then maybe you have a couple of guys that are kind of seventh round type picks, like a Clark and a Bird. All right. And then you got to have maybe 3 just free agents. All right. If you will, that are scholarship only type guys, maybe 5 of them are scholarship only. Because again, you can't pay everybody. So there's a roster construction that you have to deal with at each position, because you have to have the ability to practice, and you got to have developmental guys, and you got to have your high end guys, and that's just the nature of where we are. So super excited to have J.B. Wallace with us. And I think the biggest thing I would say is we retained our top talent. Like we retained everybody that we set out to retain. And, you know, maybe a couple guys that we could have retained that we didn't. But, again, there's a financial component to it, and you have to make some decisions. And so I'm really excited about how it went. It was a crazy experience for a week or so there, but it really went well for us, and we hit the needs that we needed to have. So the nucleus of our team is here. We'll add, you know, we hope to add maybe another high level D tackle on signing day. We hope to, you know, there might be another, like I said, free agent type guy that we have to put in a roster somewhere, and we've got 5, so we'll have 5 or 6 guys that'll be joining us in the summer. You know, freshman guys and maybe another addition in February. So it's exciting. It's exciting to get to work with all of them and get started. So, you know, that's a little bit about the new guys that are here. And then, obviously we had a very public situation with our portal signee that signed with Clemson, moved to Clemson, you know, went to class, trained, and now he's no longer at Clemson. So I know y'all have heard a lot about that. My objective today is to just provide a little bit of clarity, a little bit of context, as to what happened with this situation. So, first of all, we did everything right. You know, kid goes in the portal, we reach out, he's interested, comes and visits Clemson, says this is where he wants to go, and we sign him. He moves to Clemson, again, rents an apartment, buys a car, goes to class for a week, trains, team meeting, position meetings, writes out his goals for the semester, like full-blown, like, let's Clemson student. Like, we're rolling. And so, you know, and then all of a sudden, not here anymore. So how did we get here? Well, Sunday, January the 4th, Jordan Sorrells had his first conversation with Ryan Williams, the agent. And on Monday, January the 5th, at 8:30, Luke Ferrelli, he showed up here at Clemson with his dad for his official visit. And they came over to my house a little after 9 or so that night, okay? So I had a chance to meet with them for the very first time. And, you know, it was just to get to know each other right there at the beginning. And, you know, had a good conversation. My first question was, hey, they just come in off of Ole Miss visit. I said, how was the visit? And his dad said, not good. Said it was a mess. It was unorganized. It was chaos. The building was a mess. Nobody knew what was going on. And I was like, I was like, well, look forward to y'all seeing Clemson tomorrow. We're going to be organized and structured, and so just kind of had some chit-chat that night. And then tomorrow, the next day, on Tuesday, January the 6th, he had his visit on campus at 2:30. Ryan Williams, the agent, Luke, the player, and his dad, they verbally accepted the terms of the offer, and they made a commitment to Clemson. Everybody high-fived it. Everybody's excited. We got our linebacker. We were going to take one linebacker. We're going to take one. So we got our linebacker. We canceled all the visits of all the other guys that we were going to schedule to come in throughout the rest of the week because we're done. We're taking one. We've made our commitment. He signed. All right, so or the next day, Wednesday, that was 2:30. At 3:15, Luke and his dad left town to go back to California. Then Wednesday, January 7th at 11 a.m., Luke signed his financial aid agreement with Clemson. And then Sunday, January the 11th, he moved to Clemson. He moved to Clemson. Again, rents an apartment, buys a car, goes to class for a week. He's in training for a week, team meeting, position meeting, all that. All right? And then on Wednesday, January 14th at 9:49 p.m., the agent, Ryan Williams, calls Jordan Soles. And during that conversation, Ryan conveys that Ole Miss has been coming hard after Luke. Soles confirmed, he went with the agent, he said, are you talking about the same Luke that's enrolled at Clemson, that's been in class, that's moved here, that signed with Clemson? And the agent assured him, yes, the same one. But he also assured Jordan Soles that Luke had no intention of leaving Clemson, but just thought y'all should be in the loop and check up on him tomorrow. So Thursday, January 15th at 11:45 a.m., just this past whatever Thursday, Jordan came to me, and he told me about the conversation that he had the night before with the agent at 9:49. And so I directed Soles, hey, you reach, I don't know, I said, who's their GM? He said, his name is Austin Thomas. I said, will you reach out to their GM? He said he knows him. And I said, listen, this guy has been a head coach for 4 weeks. I said, you reach out to the GM. I'm going to give him some grace. And you let him know that we know what's going on, all right? And if he doesn't cease communication, I'm going to turn him in. And so I really thought that would be the end of it, but it wasn't. So after that, that was 11:45. At 12:10, Jordan communicated to Austin Thomas via text because he was unable to reach him on the phone. And just a few minutes later, at 12:14, they both connected on the phone. The Ole Miss GM, Austin Thomas, and Jordan reiterated our stance one more time. The GM assured Jordan that he had communicated to the agent that he wanted no part of this and that his relationship with Jordan was more important to him than Luke Ferrelli, but that Pete Golding just does what he does, quote, unquote. So at 1:30, Soles met with Luke face-to-face in his office, and Luke communicated to Jordan and to Ben Boulware that Pete texted him on Wednesday morning, the head coach at Ole Miss, when he was in his 8 a.m. class. And he said, the text message said, I know you're signed. What's the buyout? Luke said that Coach Golding also texted him a picture of a $1 million contract. Luke also mentioned to Jordan and to Ben that Coach Golding had had Trinidad Chambliss call him from his phone, and that Coach Golding was there continuing to talk on his phone to push him to re-enter the transfer portal. He also said that Jackson Dart had reached out and called him. But Luke again assured Jordan that he had no intention of leaving. And Jordan kept me in the loop and told me the same thing. So we had a staff meeting on Friday morning, January the 16th, the last day of the portal. At 11:20, Luke called Ben Boulware and told him that Mississippi had reached out again, even though I had kind of let them know the day before, had reached out again, and they had not only reached out, but they had upped and doubled their offer. But Luke told Ben, hey, it's all, we're good. And so Ben told Luke to come to the office and see Sorrells and Coach Sweeney and let them know, hey, everything is okay. So when that was over, Ben then texted Jordan Sorrells, and he let him know that Ole Miss had raised its offer to 2 years, $2 million. And again, that he had told Luke to come over and see us and let us know that everything is good. So at 11:57, so 11:20, Luke called Ben. 11:22, he texted Jordan this. At 11:57, Sorrells spoke with the agent Ryan Williams about the situation once again. The agent confirmed that head coach Pete Golding had continued to communicate with Luke and had raised the offer once again. Jordan asked to have Luke to give us the text messages that he had received from Coach Golding, but the agent was hesitant to do that because he didn't want to burn any bridges with Ole Miss, as you never know what will happen down the road. However, the agent communicated that if we were to add a second year at $1 million to the already agreed upon deal with Luke, then they would gladly give us whatever we need in order to turn Ole Miss in. Which Jordan appropriately said, no, we're not doing that. He also communicated that Ole Miss Assistant Director of Player Personnel, I guess it's Jay, it's J-A-I-C-H-O-U-D-A-R-Y, Shortery, I'm not sure, but the Assistant Director of Player Personnel was pushing to set up a Zoom call with them to discuss the details of their contract offer. So that was 11:57, talking to the agent. At 12:30, Sorrells met Luke out in the parking lot outside our football facility, and Luke communicated that he was coming to assure him and Coach Sweeney that he wasn't going anywhere. I was not in the building. Jordan called me to let me know what Luke said and for me to reach out to him. I called Luke and didn't get an answer. I'm back at work. I'm in my office. Everything's good. 4:14, Jordan Sorrells comes to see me. He had gotten a call from compliance telling him that Luke is in our compliance office trying to request to re-enter the transfer portal. So Jordan let me know. He let Tom Allen know. Called Luke, no answer. At 4:19, Jordan called the agent Ryan Williams again to alert him that Luke had requested to enter the portal. He responded via text to let him know that he was flying. Sorrells texted, Luke just reached out to our compliance and requested to go in the portal. What the heck is going on? The agent's response was, oh, bleep. Let me try and find out. At 4:40, Sorrells and Coach Allen arrived at Luke's apartment. Luke was in the driveway when they got there. His immediate response was, I'm going to Ole Miss. Coach Allen and Jordan spent some time talking to him, and when they departed, he just said, hey, I need to clear my head. At 5:39, Jordan spoke with the Ole Miss GM, Austin Thomas, again to let him know that we knew all that was going on and that we were going to pursue all options to hold them accountable for tampering. And then at 7:20, after a phone call with Tom Allen and Ben Boulware, Luke affirmed his plan to enter the transfer portal, and then he called me and told me the same thing. Once I got word of all this at 4:15 that he was in going over there trying to go in the portal, I immediately called our AD, Graham Neff. I also called Commissioner Phillips. He also called the SEC commissioner and others. So, you know, this is obviously a crazy time. We turned everything in to the NCAA. And I'm just going to just say this. This is – like, there's tampering, and then there's blatant tampering. You know, tampering 101 is when you're talking to kids who aren't in the portal. Tampering 201 is when you've already negotiated the deal with the kids not in the portal. Tampering 301 is when you got a kid who's gone in the portal, signed somewhere, moved there, gone to classes, and you're texting them while they're in class. That's like a whole nother level of tampering. And it's total hypocrisy, because all this is going on while they, on the other side, are trying to fight their defensive end from going in the portal. They have accused publicly others of tampering with their roster and their players while they are over here tampering. All right, so this is just a really sad state of affairs, and it's, to me, we have a broken system. And if there are no consequences for tampering, then we have no rules and we have no governance. It's really just that simple, okay? This is not, let me be very clear, this is not about a linebacker at Clemson. I feel sorry for the, I think it's a symptom of a system that you have a kid that I meet at 9:30 and he's, you know, signed the next day. Like, I feel sorry for the young man, to be honest with you. I blame the adults. And again, there. If you want to have adult world, then there needs to be adult consequences. Okay? So, but this is not about a linebacker at Clemson. And I don't want anyone on our team that doesn't want to be here. I would never want that. All right? But let me tell you what it is about. It's about the next kid. And it's about the next kid. And it's about the message that is being sent if this blatant tampering is allowed to happen without any consequences. This is about protecting our program. This is about college football. That's what this is about. I stay in my lane most of the time. I've seen a lot of things in my days, and I'm like, hey, man, you just do whatever you're going to do. But here's what I'm going to do. I've always just kind of stayed in my lane and handled my business. But and I've stayed focused on Clemson. But I am not going to let someone just flat out tamper with my program. If you tamper with my players, I'm going to turn you in. It's just that simple. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this isn't tampering. I don't know. Maybe I just need to get some clarification on what tampering is. But I understood tampering to be if someone is signed and in classes and not in the portal, because he's not in the portal, he had to re-enter the portal, then that's the definition of tampering. So if it's not, then my apologies. But that's what I see as tampering. So there's a lot more I could say, but I'm going to let the NCAA handle this, and I'm going to let them do their job. And I'll say this. This shouldn't be a three-year or a three-month investigation. This might take 3 days. They're either going to tell the truth or they're going to lie. It's one of the two. But you ain't got to go. All you got to do is get the phone. This is not complicated. This is very simple. And let me make this clear, too. I'm not out to get anybody fired. That's not my objective in this. I'm not out to get anybody fired. But there has to be accountability and consequences for this type of behavior and total disregard for the rules. If this happened in the NFL, which is an actual league with rules, they would be fined. They would take draft picks. They, you know, hit the cap, whatever. Again, I'm not trying to get anybody fired. I just want accountability, and there should be consequences for a total disregard for the rules. And this is such a terrible example. It's a terrible example for young coaches in this profession. And to be honest with you, this is crazy. To me, this situation is like having an affair on your honeymoon. That's basically what we're dealing with. And I know for a fact that this is happening at other places. Because you know why? Because I've had a bunch of coaches over the last week that have reached out to me. And they're going, well, let me tell you what's happened to me. Let me tell you what I know. Let me tell you my story. I've had a lot of people reach out with their stories. And so I want to challenge all of those coaches that have reached out to me. I want to challenge all of them. You need to step up and call it out. Otherwise, don't complain. You either step up and you be an example to young coaches in this profession and be people of integrity, or just shut your mouth and don't complain again. That's what I would say to all the coaches out there. Because I know this has happened, and we're never going to get this under control until we start having some consequences. We're just not. It's just that simple. And listen, one of the responses that came out of Mississippi was this right here. Well, people are calling and texting our guys. That was the response. Well, let me tell you what I know. Two wrongs don't make a right. That's what I know. And here's, we have a saying in our team room that says right is right even if nobody does it. And wrong is wrong even if everybody does it. Okay? And listen, man, this my win-loss record, I may never win another game. My win-loss record is set. This is about this profession. This is about college football. All right? So that's what happened. That's where we are. This is crazy. And it's just another reason why we need change. You can't even sign a guy and go to class and work out and have meetings and even know that that's your roster. You can't sign with the Browns and practice a week and then the Dolphins call you and say, hey, we're going to give you a little more money. And you say, see you, boys, and you go play for the Dolphins. That's not the real world. And so it's total chaos. We have to fix this chaos that's going on in college football. So that's what happened. That's where we are. And to add a little more context, I'm going to pass it off to our AD, Graham Neff, to speak on it a little further.
So I'll just frame a couple of the specifics to the circumstance. As Coach said, violation has been reported to the NCAA's process has commenced immediately. We'll certainly cooperate with the investigation. We did that, as Coach said, immediately on Friday upon the circumstances changing. This is focused on tampering for the time being. But as Coach said, it's about much more than that. And that's really where I'm going to take a lot of my remarks here. NCAA, quite frankly, was surprised that a school was willing to come forward as directly and transparently as we have. Normally, there's a lot of complaints in the media, hearsay amongst the industry, et cetera. Very little actually gets reported. That's coming from the NCAA directly, and so we're very eager and resolute to do so, to support them in the process and the accountability and the determination of the rules, and go from there. While we are exploring other potential legal options related to this tampering, not going to get into those details at this point. More broadly, listen, united, aligned, and supportive of Coach. Symbolic in some regards, but very intentional for Dabo and I to be up here together. This is a Clemson and Clemson football specific issue. And my role here is to support all 21 of our programs, of our head coaches and student athletes. So I'd do the same here with any of our 17 head coaches. But it's much bigger than our athletics department and the university. To coach's point, you know, a lot of my colleagues across the country have started to say we're at a critical juncture of college athletics. Have started to come forward more and more with a voice and perspective and platform of that, and want to really encourage and extend that here today. The system does not work without rules and the enforceability of those rules. So today we're not merely an aggrieved party, so to speak, but more so just want to elevate the experience that we've had for change in the future of college football and college sports. It's easy to point fingers. It's easy to lecture others about doing things the right way and playing by the rules, and then move on to the next competitive pressure. There's a lot of those. There's a lot of those in college sports. But what it's hard to do is roll up your sleeves, act in a way that's consistent with your values and your ethics. So we're here today to add voice and perspective to that end. I think just the near-term current landscape, there's just a confluence of these elements that are really happening. And even if we just speak to the last 6 weeks, 2 months of college football postseason and off season, that a lot of these things are hitting together. I'll cover some of them, and this is just perspective of why things have come to a fever pitch of within the industry so much. Concerns over the NCAA's ability to uphold and enforce even the most straightforward and fundamental elements of their authority, eligibility, and in our experience here, tampering. College Sports Commission, which is the entity created out of the House settlement, it's still a startup, so to speak, started in over the summer. And so while we've remained in really close contact with Brian Seeley and staff, and he's ramping up that staff, the enforcement mechanism is really just commencing and just getting going. So we're eager to see the impact and the support of the College Sports Commission. Related to that is the participation agreement that has been created, drafted, and solicited amongst the Power Four schools, which would provide some legal emphasis to the House settlement agreements, along with, quite frankly, needed optics of the Power Four schools agreeing to and wanting to be governed. Clemson, we're eager to receive. There's an updated version of that's being worked on, so we're eager to receive that and support its intent. Continued but yet to be successful progress with Congress, right? SCORE Act, CARA Act, plenty of discussions in progress. We continue to be eager to support and play our part in that from a national standpoint, but there's yet to be execution there. And so we're eager to see what help a congressional movement could be to the college sports landscape. Ever increasing competitive pressures. I spoke on this broadly, but really from a college football circumstance just over the past couple months. The coaching changes and carousel, so to speak, was historic in a lot of ways. And kind of inherent with that, as you're evaluating change for coaches and programs, and ultimately you're recruiting and trying to hire coaches ahead, you're my colleagues, you know, you're selling, you're doubling down, you're allocating investment, and that's kind of all roster values, et cetera, right? But that's done with a lot of uncertainty ahead. And we're a part of that, too, as we're all understanding and trying to figure out NIL go and fair market value range of compensation and how we're allocating revenue share and cap management. So it's just a very uncertain, again, startup time. And I say that we're part and parcel to that. But when you have this confluence of change and the competitive pressures, that makes that really, really hard to manage the uncertainty of that environment. Related to that, we and schools like us are so focused on creating above the cap dollars for our rosters to supplement from a commercial NIL value and how we can facilitate and structure those deals. Clemson Ventures is a critical component of that here at Clemson, as you all know. But just that focus, that priority, just points to the competitive pressures and the broad dollars of college athletics and college football. And listen, there's always going to be, it's college sports, frequent flyers, bad actors, those that always kind of push beyond the limits. And so, you know, the inherent ability to enforce and uphold rules is fundamental to our industry. So to take that one step further, sorry, let me get my notes, back to just attempt to lead change. Listen, it's Clemson. We believe we have a unique platform, voice to take accountability in the system and speak up and lead. All of us in the enterprise of college athletics, this is where I'm getting the mirror out, so to speak. ADs, coaches, presidents, chancellors, commissioners, we need to look real hard at how we got here, but how we get out of it. So this is kind of forward-looking, hey, want to be part of the solution, not just claim problems. Accept our own responsibility for the current state. To be fair, there are many things that are out of our control, legal rulings, state attorney generals, but ultimately we are part of the problem, and therefore we must be part of the solution. It's the College Sports Commission, it's NCAA, judicial system, Congress, private equity. You know, how about it's all of us that have been part of the governance system for years that have led us to this point? Again, I'm saying all this while looking in the mirror and holding my hand up as well as part of the solution ahead. Listen, at Clemson, we're not perfect. Despite our best efforts across all of our sports, we fall short on our own expectations and values at times. Our coaches and staff in our department know what we're striving for. In today's environment, it's easy to get sucked into the news cycle and hyperventilate when a student athlete breaks a contract or a school allegedly tampers with a player, a state judge makes a ruling to impact a specific player, one player. And then we have legal or media or coach analysis of what it means and what happens and sound bites of what happens to college sports. But then it gets lost in the bigger picture. And really the theme and the broader pattern here is the emphasis and the perspective that we're speaking on here today. I hear it from our donors and supporters all the time. College athletics, gosh, you know, where are we at and how is this the circumstance ahead? So to wrap, I'm willing to do my part. Meaningful group, work towards solutions. But as Coach was employing his colleagues from a head football coach standpoint, it's part of us to own the problem, not make excuses and point the fingers. So we think that sharing experiences, elevating issues, seeking accountability adds voice and urgency to the future state from a solution-focused standpoint, and that's the opportunity that we have here to create and frame together. So I hope that connects up our really specific, acute experience, but ultimately the why and the reason that we're up here today and sharing some of that, but also connecting it more broadly. So, Coach, I know you want to talk that and just get into some other solution type concepts that you've thought about.
Yeah, just what he's talking about. And, you know, this whole state of affairs, if you will, really kind of motivated me, sparked me to just put all my thoughts on paper and just write up my thoughts. Okay. And again, I don't get a vote. But I really appreciate y'all giving me a voice today. I really appreciate y'all being here and giving me the opportunity to speak. You know, and I don't want to be somebody who just wants to focus on the problems. I want to help create opportunities and solutions. And again, these are my thoughts. And if y'all can just give me a few minutes here, I'd like to express what I've written down. And the first thing is just the current state of affairs. You know, as a person who is truly on the front lines and witnesses the impact of decisions made and the consequences that people really don't see, it is just remarkably sad to see where we are right now in some of these areas in college football. And the big thing to me, there's three main big primary problems, and there's one primary cause. Three of the worst issues in our game right now are all happening for the same reason. And it's because our current calendar is just stupid. I don't know how else to say it. It's just stupid. We have athletic directors that are firing coaches in the middle of the season because they feel pressed to get ahead of this calendar. We have players who are leaving their teams during the postseason. Some are literally missing playoff games and national championship games. Just this year, we had a young man at Miami that goes in the portal on the 2nd and signs with Indiana on the 5th. What planet am I living on? This is not what college football is all about. Players are leaving early because they're trying to get ahead of this calendar. Because the calendar is forcing them to do this. They're being forced to make these early decisions. Coaches like Lane Kiffin, they're leaving teams amid playoff runs. And listen, right or wrong, whether you agree with it, don't agree with it personally, let's just take that off the table. Professionally, I understand. He's trying to get ahead of the calendar so that he can be successful at his next job. He didn't create the calendar. All three are major issues, and they're all a function of the same problem. So let's fix the problem, okay? So here's how I say fix the problem. This is my fix for the calendar. If you're thinking about fixing the calendar, I think for me, the first thing we must think about is what's best for the player? What's best for the player? What's best for the education of the player? What's best for these players to me is to stay in school and complete another semester of academics, which also gives them more time to make a good, informed decision. This has been the first year to me that I've had to be deeply invested and involved with the portal. We've had some one-offs here or there, but that week was crazy. And it was eye-opening for me. I, as I said publicly, it was like meeting somebody in a bar and going across the street 8 hours later and getting married in the Elvis wedding chapel. It was crazy. It was crazy. It's the best analogy I can give you. A calendar change would create a cooling off period for everyone. Watching these kids being forced to make a decision in 24 hours or less because of this calendar, it's been eye-opening to me the impact that it has on them academically with the amount of hours that they are losing and the amount of progress toward degrees that they are losing. You know, and a lot of coaches will say, well, I want to know my team by January. I don't want anybody there that's not on my team. And I get that. But that's what's best for the coaches. That's not what's best for the players. What I believe is best for the players, and also what I think is best for the coach and the team. My suggestion is that we move the portal window, call it February 25th to March 5th, or March 1st to March 10th. One of them. The 10-day window at that point of the calendar would fix a lot of problems. Number one, ADs will quit firing coaches midseason, and they can let them finish the season. If they want to make a change after the season, they can. And the new coach that's hired, he will take the job knowing that everybody that was on that team is still going to be there for another semester. The new coach is going to have time to sell his vision, articulate what his program's about, get to know his players during that cooling off period. And in turn, fewer players will be forced to leave. Not everybody, newsflash, not everybody is going into the portal willingly. A lot of players are being forced to leave, and this would help alleviate that. Number two, the players would continue to progress academically during this critical semester. And when teams hit the field March 1 or whatever that date is, hey, you know what your team is. You know what your team is. And the guys that are going to leave, they're going to leave. Hey, they're not in your building. They're not a problem. They're going to school. But those transfers, now they have all of March and all of April to make a better decision, to make a wise decision while completing another whole semester academically. A better academic fit, not just a football fit. And number four, it would help the players be more informed on that important decision. They would have, again, more time to go see places. And it would be the same for the coaches. Coaches, we would know our team. We would know our gaps. And now, instead of having to meet a guy at 9 and make a decision at noon, a massive decision, by the way, like, you don't just go buy a house for $600,000 without getting, you know, like, an inspection, you know, all kind of stuff. Like, you can't just go buy a house in a day. And we're making these huge financial decisions in a couple hours. It's crazy to me. But coaches would know our gaps, and we would know our needs, and this change would give coaches all of March and April to do our due diligence, to build relationships, to get to make to know the people, to make better decisions. Right now, everybody's making decisions in a 24-hour period. I am literally meeting a guy at 4, and he's making a decision the next day at noon. And to me, that's crazy. The kid has no choice, and we have no choice because of this calendar. And the adjusted portal window would clean that up. Now, what about spring practice? Well, I believe it's time to go away from the current spring model. Some schools are on quarters. Some are on semesters. Some teams have a lot of transfers. Some have very few. My suggestion is you give everybody 18 days of OTAs and let the timing be up to the coach, to the institution. Maybe 5 of those 18 days could be in shells if you want. But no matter what, it's 18 days of OTAs that you can use anytime between March and July. Use them however you want. If you know that you're not going to get your star quarterback until May, or the majority of your incoming players until May, then you strategically save your days. Maybe you use a few with your current guys, and then you use the others when the rest of the players arrive. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation because teams are in and out of school at different times. But everybody could use those days as they see fit in a way that's best for their program and the needs of their teams and players. The Kiffin example and its effect on the postseason. With the adjusted calendar, a coach like Lane Kiffin, he can go win the national championship. And on January 21st, he can become the head coach at LSU. And he's going to be able to walk into a team meeting room with everybody still there. He then has a month to recruit his team and these guys and to meet with them and sell his vision and all those things. And then the guys that are going to leave can move on after that. Then he has March and he has April to make good decisions for his roster in a much more better and productive way. Players would no longer feel pressure to walk away from bowl games, playoff teams, or forfeit appearances in the semifinals or national championship games because they have to hustle into the portal because they're rushing to get into school right away. These players could stay, and they could finish their seasons knowing, hey, I'll have time for that. I got another semester of academics, and I'll have the spring to figure out what's next. Tampering. The calendar shift would cut out much of the current tampering. Not eliminate it, but it would cut out much of the current tampering. And quite frankly, what we're dealing with right now is flat-out extortion in some cases. The tampering and some of this extortion that's happening right now is because of the intensity of the decisions that are having to be made in such a short period of time. Right in the middle of when people are trying to play bowl games, playoff games, etc. Adding to the pressure of all of this, there is absolutely zero transparency from a financial standpoint. People are lying. People just lie. And because of that, people make rash decisions because there's no transparency. There is no other sport or league that operates this way, and this present system is crazy. High school signees and graduates. High school kids should still be able to sign early in December. That shouldn't change. We have to protect the high school signing window. I've just been on the road this week. The high school coaches and how high school recruiting is being affected, it's really sad. This would help that. This would help that. And again, you have the early signing because these kids want to be mid-years and all that stuff. If a program wants to fire the coach, then those high school signees can enter the portal. They can leave. It is what it is. Same thing for a graduate. If you're a graduate, hey, you can you know, move on your way as well. Okay? Furthermore, with the current system, many of these young men are not going to graduate because they're losing so many hours and they are simply going places chasing money and chasing eligibility. I just experienced this. I've never experienced this. But this is happening so fast, and I'm looking at this transcript, a really good student, and I'm looking at all the hours that are not going to transfer to Clemson. And so what? And then I'm looking at, okay, well, here's the plan that he's going to have to be eligible. It's really sad. We have, I won't call a name, but we have a couple kids that are leaving here. One young man needed 12 hours. He needs like 12 hours to graduate from Clemson. But because of this calendar, he's being forced to go in the portal because he wants to go somewhere and try to play this year. That guy would be able to stay at Clemson and graduate and then go make a better decision on where he wants to go. It just doesn't make any sense. These guys, I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, this guy's going to get eligible. Now, they'll graduate from a place like Clemson because we're Clemson. But there's a lot of these kids that are not going to graduate. I'm just telling you the facts. They're not going to graduate. They're going to spend their short-term money that they've got, and they're not going to have degrees. And that's sad to me. Many of these young men are leaving currently would end up staying with their team with a cooling off period. There's a lot right now, there's a lot of emotional decisions being made right after the season. Guy didn't play as much, whatever. Everybody's in their ear. With a cooling off period rather than this current window right at the end of the season, you know what? That team meeting room would look a little different when they got back in there. Those segment meeting rooms would look a little different when they got back in there. And now all of a sudden, maybe that kid who would have left, maybe he's got a little different vision. And instead, maybe he ends up and he stays. But if he does choose to leave, the coach then has time to go and replace him. And the player has time to make an informed, wise decision, especially academically. So why the calendar change is imperative. Again, we got a lot of things we need to fix in college football, but first and foremost, it is imperative that we fix this calendar. And I believe this is the right way to do it. Again, it's just my opinion. Everything that's happening right now, it would all slow down. When you hit the field as a coach in the spring or summer, you know what your team is. You know what your gaps and needs are. And then you have the flexibility to structure your OTAs all the way from March to July based on when your players are arriving. This will protect coaches and athletic directors, again, from being feeling forced into early midseason decisions and attempts to get ahead of the calendar. And it'll also protect college football's postseason. I don't know of another sport that doesn't protect their postseason. Everyone will have plenty of time, and everybody, the players and the coaches, can finish the season. And then academically, again, it allows college football to live out its mission, and that is to use football as a means to equip young men with education. The players can continue their academic progress while planning their next move. And they can plan that move, again, with much more clarity since they will be equipped with much more information from the perspectives of both football and academics. Now, these next two things I want to mention. I understand that you would have to have congressional help, that you would have to have some type of collective bargaining. I've always been against this employee idea of employees, but quite frankly, that might be the only way to protect the collegiate model, to have two sides have some type of agreement so that you can have some rules that can actually be enforced because everybody's agreed upon them. And so I just want to just throw that out there because, again, I understand you got to have some help. So the first thing I would say on the transfer policy, my proposal is that everybody gets one free transfer with no consequence. Players whose head coaches leave or the head coach is fired may also transfer without a consequence. If you graduate, you can transfer without a consequence. For all other instances, players must sit one season following their transfer. This would mitigate, not eliminate, but this would mitigate the tampering and again, in some cases, the extortion with agents trying to renegotiate every single year. However, I want to say this. Any player who does have to sit a year, they can have that year of eligibility back reinstated upon graduation. This would incentivize graduation and minimize this three, four-time transfer situation that, to me, is plaguing college football. The next thing is smarter revenue sharing. I think it's outstanding that players are able to share in the revenue that they help produce. And now that revenue sharing is in place, I believe we can design a better system to help them maximize this financial blessing at this stage in their life, which would protect them from themselves, from their agents, and even in some instances, their own families. Players should receive their scholarship. And I believe, and again, I know this is collective bargaining, whatever, but players should receive their scholarship and what I believe is some type of established minimum. Call it $100,000. Call it whatever, just for the sake of argument. All right? Which would allow them to live greatly, greatly while being a college student athlete. I also feel like the players should still be allowed to negotiate their fair market value for rev share and NIL. However, I believe any money above the minimum should go in some type of compounding annuity or financial product that would not be accessible until they either graduate or turn 25, whichever comes first. Again, this would incentivize graduation, and this would mirror a very common practice with estate planning. Now, again, I know this is pie in the sky and requires congressional help and collective bargaining and all that stuff. But as adults, we all know that the graduate or the 25-year-old version of these players will be much more mature and prepared, and they will think differently than they did at ages 18 to 21. This is why car insurance is much cheaper for the 25-year-old than it is the 17-year-old. Because data says. So long-term outlook. I believe if we don't act about these current transfer rules, I believe we're going to look up in 5 or 6 years and we're going to see a mass of players without degrees who will have spent their short-term money. We're going to have a bunch of screwed up 30-year-olds. 5 years ago, I sat in meetings and I said, if this all happens, tampering is going to be crazy. And here we are. And it's sad to me that sometimes something bad has to happen for people to step in and fix it. And you know, at the end of the day, it may very well be the voice of this era of player that creates the change. Because I do believe we're going to have some screwed up 30-year-olds that have no degrees, that have spent their money, that can't play football anymore, and aren't connected to anything because of the system that has been set up for them. Reports cite that almost 78% of NFL players are bankrupt within 2 years of being out of the league. Those are men in their mid-20s to 30s. Let me just tell everybody, we're not going to get a different result with an 18 to 23-year-old. It's going to be worse. Even for those who do go on and play in the NFL, it's for 3.3 years on average. Right now, college football and the system that is set up, it is set up to reward the 2% that have a chance to make it to the NFL. That's what all the stories are written on. That's what gets all the headlines. Nobody wants to write about all these kids in the portal that ain't going nowhere. Nowhere. We got a lot of young men that are making decisions. They've never lived away from home a day in their life, and they're making a decision, oh, I'm going to get the most money here while I go there. And a big reason why you got 10,000 guys going in the portal is because then they get there, and then they don't like the people that they're with. There's a lot that comes with money. These are young people who don't know what a 1099 is, a W-2, gift in kind, and nor should they. They're 17, they're 18. Right now, again, I believe college football is set up to reward the 2% that have a chance to make it to the NFL. As adults, we should know better and we should do better for the 98% of the college football players that will not play in the NFL. So I think we have a responsibility to make sure that we educate, that we equip, and that we graduate the young men that have been entrusted to all of us in college football. We should do what's right for the long-term version of these players and not what's best in the short term. There are very few kids, again, that are moving away from home for the first time who are prepared or mature enough to handle large amounts of money and all the pressures that come with it. It is sad to see so many young men wasting their money on things that they will regret when they get a little older and more mature. Again, as adults, we know better, and we should be better. We need to create a system that allows the student athlete to maximize their collegiate earning potential, their overall development, and their academic focus. And let me make this clear. I am very aware that my thoughts, my opinions, my proposal can and probably will be construed as the thoughts of a self-serving, high-earning coach. But I'm proposing this as a 56-year-old man who entered college football almost 38 years ago as a student athlete with nothing but Pell Grants, student loans, a great work ethic, and a dream. I've been a walk-on player, and I've been a scholarship player. My dad and my mom married at 18 years of age. My dad was an appliance man. He fixed washers and dryers. He'd fix them up and sell them. My mom cut hair and worked in the mall. I am the first college graduate in my entire family. And I have experienced the impact of education and the opportunity that comes with education. I've been a graduate assistant coach. I've been an assistant coach. And I've been a head coach since 1993. I've been doing this. I've been an 18 to 23-year-old. I've raised three of my own. And I've been doing life with 18 to 23-year-olds since I started coaching in 1993. I propose this from the perspective of someone who has benefited from this great sport and someone who has dedicated his life to helping my players become great men through this game. I believe that without action, mental health issues are going to drastically rise as graduation rates decline. I have witnessed in the past few years alone these things, and I fear it's only going to get worse. We need some type of leadership. We need some type of bipartisan help, because these players, they need us to provide the right leadership and the right structure at this incredibly critical time in their lives. So I'm just telling y'all, this comes from my heart. These are my words. This comes from my heart. This comes from my experience. And this comes from my sincere concern that if we don't fix this system, so many young men are not going to graduate. And they're not going to get the proper development that we're here to provide. And I also want y'all to know, and most of y'all, well, ironically, hey, I'm not pessimistic. Y'all know I'm a half full guy. Always. I'm not pessimistic. I am incredibly optimistic that smart people who care can come together and not take stuff away, but create a more healthy and sustainable system for college football. And I want to say clearly, like, this ain't about me. Again, if I don't win another game, you know, my win-loss record is what it is. I've always said we run this program for what's best for the 30-year-old version of the player. And what matters more to me is not winning, but how we win. What matters the most to me is serving our players' heart. What matters the most to me is equipping them graduating them. That's what matters most to me. So this ain't about me. This is my 24th year at Clemson. This is my 18th year as the head coach. Two things I know about myself. I'm a survivor, and I'm a winner. Those are two things I know about myself. I'm on my third AD. I'm about to have my third president. I've been through good and bad seasons. I've been in the BCS era. I've been in the Final Four era. I've been in this Final 12 era. I've been through COVID, NIL, portal, tampering, you name it. I've seen it all. I've done it all. This ain't about me. And all while this is going on, we lead the nation in graduation. The last 3 years, and the craziest time in the history of college football, we lead the nation. And we're tops in the nation in retention. To me, this is about college football. It's about embracing positive change. But it's about creating a more sustainable future and a system with enforceable rules. And so I appreciate y'all giving me the opportunity to just express my thoughts. And, you know, that's just from my heart. and having enforceable rules. And again, let me say, I'm not trying to get anybody fired. But like, when is enough enough? If we have rules and tampering is a rule, then there should be a consequence for that. And shame on the adults. If we're not going to hold each other accountable to something as just blatant as this, then we have bigger issues. And again, I don't have any personal vendettas, and I don't have any issue with Luke. This is a young man. You know, I don't want anybody to be here to want to be here. I want him to be able to do what he wants to do. But there has to be some rules, and there has to be some enforcement of the rules. There just has to be. And so hopefully, maybe this is a tipping point. Maybe this is something that can bring people together where maybe some other coaches will speak up. I know there's a lot of coaches who feel exactly like I feel, but they're afraid to speak because somebody, oh, God forbid, will criticize them. Somebody might say something bad about them. And to me, that's sad. We need leadership. We need leadership. And again, my hope in this whole thing with Ole Miss is that like there's just ownership. There's leadership and there's ownership. You can either tell the truth or lie. And then whatever the consequences, let's move on. I don't want anybody to lose their job, but I do want some ownership. And I want some clarity from the NCAA that if this is a rule, can we enforce it? And so we'll see what happens with that as we move forward. So, again, I know that's a lot, but it's a lot in my head, and it was almost therapeutic to get it out of my head and to write it down. Maybe one thing comes from it, but I appreciate the opportunity to be able to just speak on it. And, again, I don't get a vote. You know, the ADs and all the higher-ups, so I have to deal with that. But the one thing I have is perspective, and I have a very clear view because I'm on the front lines, and I see it. And so, man, I want to see the 98% of college football be served in a better way than the way we're serving them right now. Appreciate it. Any questions?
We appreciate everybody's time today. Thank you all for being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for your
Everybody,
time.
Please stay safe with the weather.
Thank you.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are the Roar.
Not in long haul times. At Upcountry Fiber, we believe our neighbors deserve better. Real people right here in your community, ready to help. No pressure, no surprise fees, just fast, reliable internet and friendly local service. And right now, you'll save $15 a month for a year any fiber internet plan. Upcountry Fiber, certified local. Visit upcountryfiber.com/year-of-internet. Upcountry Fiber, a stronger connection.
Running a business means wearing multiple hats.